How's it going, everybody? Welcome to That Time of the Week. I'm your host, Matthew Morgan, and today we're going to be talking about mainly politics, but there are two football stories I guess I'll talk about real fast. The first one was a big trade over the before the trade deadline ended. Adonai Mitchell from the Colts. So the Colts traded, I guess it was a better way to phrase it. The Colts traded Adonai Mitchell, a wide receiver, and two first-round picks in exchange for Sauce Gardner from the Jets. I think that was probably a good trade for both teams, honestly. I mean, the Jets, I'm a big fan of Adonai Mitchell, personally. He's tall and he's fast. His route running is okay. I think that he's going to be good at some point. Two first-round picks is obviously good. I mean, first-round pick's the best pick you can get. So, I mean, I don't know, you know, obviously you don't know where they're going to fall at because the season's not over. But, so, yeah, I mean, I think that's good for the Jets as well. And obviously the Colts are, I want to say 5-2. One second, I will look real fast. I should have probably checked beforehand. 7-2. Sorry, there's been more games than I figured. Well, obviously, because I guess the trade deadline is week 8. But, yeah, so they are 7-2. So they are, in fact, probably on a Super Bowl chase this year. So Sauce Gardner is a good addition for them, so long as he plays out well. So that's that. I mean, good trade for both of them personally. I think that the Jets won, just because I like Adonai Mitchell, and draft picks are always valuable because you can always draft another Sauce Gardner. As a matter of fact, the Jets are great at drafting defensive players. They drafted Sauce Gardner, C.J. Mosley. They've drafted all kinds of people. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Matt. You remember a while back when we was talking about the kickoffs?
Yes.
I watched some games that had onside kicks, and evidently you got to let the refs know that you're going to do an onside kick, and they'll move it back to where, you know, like it was.
Yeah. You have to proclaim you're doing an onside kick now.
But the only bad thing about that is, though, they know it's coming. Because sometimes you know it's got to be, you know, coming. But
yeah,
teams do that.
It's pretty useless in my... I mean, onside kicks were already pretty useless, honestly. I mean, if you look at the statistics on them, I mean, you hardly ever won onside kicks. But at the same time, I mean, now onside kicks are pretty much actually useless, because now, I mean, they know it's an onside kick. I mean, you have to, like I said, you have to proclaim it.
Yeah, so...
Something that's funny. If you go to a game if you go to a football game, I don't know if you can hear it on the TV or not, but if they have if they're running like a play action or something, and the lineman might go far downfield, they'll make him an eligible receiver. So like that, you might hear like number 56 is an eligible receiver, and it's often a lineman, and then like you know, that way they can't get in trouble for legal man downfield.
Yeah, they got to declare it to the rest, but do they declare it to the other? Does the other team know it?
Yeah, they call it over the loudspeaker. Like I went to the Browns Dolphins game, and they called it over the loudspeaker. I think it was I think it was the Dolphins who it happened a couple of times. So you have to proclaim when somebody's an eligible receiver as well.
Well, in a way, it could benefit you if you call for him to be eligible, and then they're going to put more emphasis on him and maybe leave somebody else go one-on-one that can beat the cornerback.
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot. I mean, as a matter of fact, the Dolphins have been doing that with him. I think they did that either the week prior or 2 weeks prior, something like that, and they didn't throw the ball to him once, didn't even look his way. I think he actually got a reception or two because they didn't cover him because they assumed he wouldn't be thrown to due to the... I mean, they watched film, obviously. They assumed it was just to avoid the illegal man downfield.
Well, that was good for him.
Yeah, it was good for him. I mean,
he got a couple of receptions, and hopefully it was good for his team, too.
Well, I mean, the Dolphins got absolutely, you know, I guess, you know, whooped on in that game. The Browns looked like a good team that game, you know.
The Browns just ain't never gonna do it, are they?
Probably not. You know, the Browns have had some great rosters over the years, but their coaching staff is always just, like, the worst in the league somehow.
Yeah. Even Bill Belichick was there, though.
Yeah, I know. But the Browns do just, like, cycle through head coaches like they're going out of style. There's that. They do the same thing with quarterbacks, which is why they can't ever find a quarterback, because they have one for, like, 2 years and say, well, he's bad, and then they move on from him.
You know, some players, if they're drafted by the Browns, they don't want to play for the Browns.
I don't blame
them. They're out a year.
You know, it's funny, because years ago, I don't know if you remember Corey Coleman or not, he got drafted to the Browns forever ago. I think it was Corey. Corey Coleman got drafted to the Browns years ago. I was watching the draft when he got drafted. He looked like the most unhappy person on all of planet Earth. He did not smile. I felt bad for him.
Well, he was just hoping maybe they would trade him to get on a better team or something. It could be awful, you know, frustrating when you know you've got talent and can help the team and they're not using it in that way and nobody else is, you know, doing nothing either. But
well, also the Browns are a young team. Like, I don't mean like the player, like the Browns, the organization themselves. I mean, because, you know, I mean, the Browns have always been around, I guess, but then, you know, they moved to Baltimore, and then now there's the Cleveland Browns, but the Baltimore Ravens were the Cleveland Browns. They're basically an expansion team. And expansion teams, to my knowledge, are just basically free agents.
Well.
So, I mean, they're still young. I mean, they haven't been around for all too long.
I don't know. I still hope that they'll do something.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I have nothing against the Browns. As a matter of fact, I like a couple of the Browns players. Like, I like Dylan Gabriel. He is doing rather well considering he's playing for the Browns and doesn't have anybody to throw the ball to. I like Isaiah Bond. He's actually a wide receiver, but they don't give him much playing time for whatever reason. I've always been high on David Njoku. I like Dylan Sampson. Obviously, I like Quinshon Judkins. I like a lot of their players. It's just unfortunate that they're, like, 2-7.
That they can never jail, you know?
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
And Cincinnati, for the last 2-3 years, you know, with Joe Burrow there, I thought they was going to do something, but, God, he's hurt all the time.
Well, you know, I think the Bengals kind of, when the Bengals paid Joe Burrow all that money, I think they kind of did away with their Super Bowl chances, because, like, when you pay a quarterback all that money, now there's just, I mean, you don't have money to pay anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, they
paid. The quarterback ain't going to win it for you.
Yeah, I mean, all of their money went to pretty much three players. I mean, all their money is pretty much in Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, and then Ja'Marr Chase. Like, those are the, so, I mean,
Joe Burrow can scramble, but he's not a good enough scrambler to make up for, you know.
The lack of offensive line.
You know.
Yeah.
That's what used to bother me with Ohio State, especially under Urban Meyer. His quarterbacks was always running quarterbacks. And then they get hurt. And then they have to use
Cardale Jones.
Yeah. You know, in that game with Michigan and the championship game. And it was just lucky that Cardale was capable of doing it.
Well, it's unfortunate, because I was a big fan of Braxton Miller, and then they put him at wide receiver, and then his career, you know, didn't go anywhere from that point. I mean, he got drafted to the NFL, but his career really didn't go anywhere from that point.
But didn't he get hurt the reason why they
played
him at wide receiver?
I think he tore something in his, like, throwing arm or something, so they moved him to wide receiver, because, I mean, he was fast and could catch. So, I mean, he was a good wide receiver in college. I mean, he got drafted to the NFL as a wide receiver. So, I mean, he was good, but, you know, he just, I liked
him. Terrell Pryor, they started him out as a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I do believe he actually holds a record.
And changed him to wide receiver, too.
I think that he actually holds the record for the longest touchdown rush by a quarterback.
Oh.
I think it's 99 yards.
I wonder if he's playing anywhere or no.
Oh.
Canadian Football League or anything like that.
No, I think Terrell Pryor probably retired. If he plays, I think he probably plays for like the fan control, like one of the small leagues. But yeah, also the longest touchdown rush by a quarterback in NFL history is 93 yards achieved by Terrell Pryor while he was on the Raiders.
Well, that's good. Terrell Pryor, when you looked at him on TV, he just didn't seem that fast, but he was fast.
Oh yeah, Terrell Pryor was quick.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll listen to the rest of your show.
Alrighty, sounds good. Thank you.
Later.
By the way, yes, Terrell Pryor is retired. I looked him up real fast. He was retired. By the way, he ran a 4.38 40-yard dash, so he's, you know, real quick. But, the trade, yeah. So Marshawn Nyland, he is a defensive end, I do believe, the position. I mean, he was an edge rusher, but they use linebackers a lot to rush the edge, too, so I'm not exactly sure. But I think he was a D-end. He has, died. He was 24, played for the Cowboys. Cause of death was suicide. So that's rough. I'm not exactly sure, obviously, why or anything like that, but, it is rather, unfortunate and, I don't really know what to say. It's 24 is, young way to go. So I just felt that was, necessary to bring up. He did have his first career touchdown. I do believe it was a scoop and score, so like a fumble recovered for a touchdown. So that would have been his first career touchdown in the NFL. But yeah, unfortunate, sad to see Marshawn Nyland go. He had a, great career ahead of him, but unfortunately, that was cut short. Like I said, rather unfortunate. There has been, I don't know. I guess it depends on what works out. I mean, there's been, I don't think there's been any, insane talks about it, but there have been, rumors, I guess. I don't know. Essentially, people thought that he might have had something like CTE. At 24, most people get drafted at 21 or 22. 21 if you get drafted as a third year, so a junior or a redshirt sophomore. Or if you play till your senior year, you're 22, 23, depending on if you were redshirted. He's probably been in the NFL for 2-3 years. I guess you had to play a lot of football to get there, but, I don't know. So, I guess we'll have to see once that all comes out, but it is, like I said, rather unfortunate, and sad to hear of the passing of, Marshawn Nyland. Alrighty. So, now that, the football stuff is out of the way, I would like to mention, by the way, Luke 311 Ministries and the Peanut Butter and Jelly Truck, they are asking for Uncrustables, peanut butter and jelly, or monetary donations due to the, there has been urgent need for, the peanut butter jelly truck services due to the, I assume, due to the loss of SNAP as of recently. They were on earlier, and they said usually they get about an hour and, a few blocks out of one load of, sandwiches, but as of recently, they get about 15 minutes and, not even the entirety of the way down the street, and they gotta stop. So, that's rough. So, if you can, obviously, that would be great help to them out there. They've done a lot for us and a lot for the community, so it's always good to give back to the community. Speaking of another thing, Marion's Lee Street Presbyterian Church is holding their annual bazaar at 455 Lee Street here in Marion. It is going to be on November 8th. That's a Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2, and lunch is going to be served 11 to 1. There's going to be a lot of stuff there, like baked goods, homemade candies, popcorn balls, decoration, gifts, crafts, miscellaneous items. They're going to have vegetable soup and chicken and noodles, it looks like. Shredded chicken as well, hot dogs, chili, so on and so forth. It's going to be a great event. You won't want to miss that. So be sure to stop by to the Lee Street Presbyterian Church at 455 Lee Street here in town. Okay. So, as of Tuesday, there were the local elections. As of Tuesday, there were the local elections, the Board of Election. They're busy people over there. They had a lot of write-in candidates, so I'm not sure exactly what happened to the, I'm not sure what all goes into the process of counting write-in votes, but write-in candidates, I guess, take a while to count. I was told that the early votes would be 8:15 to 8:30, or sorry, 8 to 8:15, I do believe. So I was expecting 8 to 8:30, because, you know, like I said, stuff does happen. I mean, you know, there's busy people, and there are rules to how you have to count and things like that. So there's that. So I'm not, you know, no worries there. But I was told that it'll be a process to count the absentee ballots and the actual ballots that come in from the voting day due to a lot of write-in candidates, which, by the way, there were a considerable amount. I looked at a pamphlet on the wall of everybody running for office, and there were, I do believe, 8 write-in candidates. I don't remember them being that common. But like, for example, like the Green Camp Village Council, there were 3 candidates, and all 3 of them are write-in candidates. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, 8 write-in candidates total. I do believe it was either 7 or 8. But yeah, so those votes didn't end up coming out till 10:45, roughly. But it ends up the same nonetheless. I guess we got 1 ballot instead of 3. Or sorry, 1 batch instead of 3. But Scott Kreider did win. I guess at-large city councilman, the Democrat, he was the third vote getter, which we expected, but he was only the third vote getter by 21 votes, which is rather interesting. I mean, that's a close election, Oh, 21 votes is a lot closer than I thought he was going to get. Now, I mean, I figured that he would get in due to, you know, it's the top 3 highest vote getters. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's rather interesting. I think that should the Democrats have run more seats, they probably would have won more seats. Or run more candidates, they probably would have won more seats. Just judging by the numbers that voted for Scott Kreider. To be fair, I mean, Ron Prater did win re-election against Anthony Azaria, so the Democrat lost there. And Prater even said on this show that he was outworked by Anthony. Anthony ran a great campaign. He was out, you know, everywhere. So there's that. But, yeah, oh, I forgot what else I was going to talk about. Charter City. Charter City did go down, and because Charter City went down, we don't know what the votes on the Charter Commission looked like, because it was, you know, if one failed, the other one was kind of irrelevant. So because Charter City failed, they did not count the commission votes. But Charter City failed by a good margin, 10%, a little bit over 10%, I do believe. I didn't expect Charter City to go down like that. I don't know that I expected it to go down at all. I mean, I didn't really, I don't know, it wouldn't surprise me if it passed, but the majority of people I talked to, and by all means, it was not the majority of Marion at all, and most of them probably lived in the county, now that I'm thinking about it. It was just an interesting topic of conversation, but they didn't seem to be, all for it. They didn't quite understand what the charter was all about. And I don't really think it's a Democrat-Republican issue. I mean, I know the numbers are pretty close, but I figured there's got to be some crossover. I mean, there were people, I mean, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, I guess, but I mean, I know, for example, I mean, Jason Schauber voted against it, I do believe. He was the only one. And he's a Republican, and the Democrat being Ayers Ratliff voted for it. So, I mean, I don't know. I think there's probably a decent amount of crossover there. But, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I think that's interesting. So, yeah. The elections went well for the Democrats here in Marion, I suppose. I mean, they only ran two candidates and won one. But nationally, I guess, well, statewide, but on the across the nation is, I guess, the best way to put it. The Democrats did well. New Jersey elected a Democratic governor. You know, I do believe New Jersey... well, New Jersey is, I mean, it's not necessarily surprising. I mean, New Jersey is relatively, you know, it's over there. It's bluer. I mean, it's over by New York. So they elected a Democratic governor, which not, like I said, not necessarily surprising. Virginia elected their first woman governor, who was also a Democrat. So there's that. And Virginia is a purple state, so that, I mean, they, it's not, it wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have been unusual for them to elect a Republican to the governorship there. By the way, both of those candidates won over 56% of the vote, so they won handedly. I mean, you know, 56% of the vote, that's, I mean, big numbers. That's, you know, 10%, over 10%. And then obviously you had Mom Donnie winning in New York, over Cuomo. And the Prop 50 for California passed, which is the redistricting bill, which would have given the well, I guess, which does give the Democrats more seats in the House. So, good day for the Democrats. I mean, I know that Vivek Ramaswamy was rather unhappy. He said that they got their butts kicked pretty much. And I also know that I do believe Ted Cruz has said you know, things about it, because, you know, they lost the election pretty rough. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And also, I don't know, but I almost said like I said earlier, but I don't think I did. I did. Anyways. So I had to think of her name. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a big Donald Trump supporter, has been at Donald Trump as of late. Same thing with Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, big supporter of Donald Trump, has been at Donald Trump late, as of late. So I think that's, you know, rather interesting. I mean, those were both adamant supporters at the beginning. So there's that. Also, I think it even came up in the first hour of the Friday night show. But there's a thought that maybe the Republicans are using the government shutdown to avoid the release of the Epstein files. Now, is it true? Maybe, I guess, I don't know. But at the same time, you know, I would have figured, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because, I mean, it's going to be released, because, I mean, to my understanding, is this lady that they're not putting in, or not swearing in, is the final vote needed to release the Epstein files. So, I mean, it's going to happen. So, I don't really understand. Like, even if the election goes, like, I don't know, over 50 days, like, eventually, the election, the shutdown, even if the shutdown goes over 50 days, I mean, like, it's got to open back up at some point. So, just postponing the inevitable. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. Unless the whole purpose is just, like, to give time to redact names and stuff. I don't really know what the given logic is there. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, like I said, could it be true? I guess. It wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to be released. It's pretty good and well, I guess, the common understanding. So, you know, there's that, I guess. By the way, it is good, though, day 38 of the government shutdown, so there's that. That's exciting, I guess. By the way, the Democrats did today put forward an offer to fund the Affordable Care Act for only a year. And I guess the understanding is because the Republicans, you know, have the claim that they have a bill, or they have something to replace the Affordable Care Act, which is like the you know, Obamacare subsidies. So, sorry, I had to fix the headset. It was bothering me. But yes, so I guess because they had something to replace the Affordable Care Act. And they said that they would show it when the government was open, so there was a deal put forward to only fund the Affordable Care Act for a year, and I guess the understanding was that, should they actually have a plan, they would, I guess they'd be able to present it, and they'd be able to, you know, work through it, and then should it be better than the Affordable Care Act, they could put it in place, of, you know, the Affordable Care Act. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, to my understanding, went on The View, the other day, and said pretty good and well that they don't have a plan, and that was my assumption. I mean, I won't lie. I mean, it's like, I think it was the same, it was on the question of the Obamacare and whatnot, during the debate. When they asked Trump about it, and he said something along the lines of, "I have concepts of a plan." I don't know what concepts of a plan are, and I haven't seen the concepts of a plan, nor have I heard anything about them up until the government shut down. So, I mean, you know, there's that, I guess. Also, I think Trump is still trying to get the Senate to, I guess, call the filibuster, he's trying to get the filibuster to stop, so they can open the government unilaterally, which I don't think the Republicans will do, because, I mean, at some point you're not going to be the majority party anymore, and if you do it to them, they're bound to do it to you. I mean, they'll use the, I don't know what they really call it, but they'll kill the filibuster. With majority vote, you only need majority vote, and then they can vote on the thing and get it passed. But I don't think you can get enough Republicans to agree to that. Like I said, I mean, because at some point they know they're not going to be the majority party anymore, and they don't want it to happen to them. So I think that I think it's interesting. Speaking of, by the way, as of, sometime today, I don't remember exactly when, the judge ordered Donald Trump to pay SNAP, and we were all under the assumption that the Trump administration was going to fund SNAP, you know, food stamps and whatnot, and then Trump appealed it. Well, I guess Trump appealed it first, and then the federal judge said, no, you can't appeal, or basically denied the appeal. And then, right before 7 o'clock, Trump appealed it again, but this time to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court was not in session at that point. You know, it was 7 o'clock. So, I guess you gotta wait until Monday to see what happens. Now, I mean, I guess they could always come in on an off day, I guess, I'm sure. But I don't know that they will. So they have to decide whether or not to hear that case and see what happens then. I think the fact that the president has specifically asked the Supreme Court to rule or to block the decision of the court to have SNAP funded. I think that's a little disingenuous to some extent. I mean, I don't know that that's the right word, honestly, is disingenuous. But anyways, it doesn't seem quite right to me. I think that, you know, the Supreme Court's supposed to be a check and a balance, and to have the president just asking the Supreme Court to do things, Especially if they do it. I think if the Supreme Court rules on this and blocks it, there are going to be a lot of upset people. I mean, I think people are already rather upset because the perceived checks and balances are not working. I mean, the Congress hasn't done anything to stop the president. The courts have tried. They've done rulings and whatnot, but the rulings just get overturned by upper courts, and things like that. There are so many lawsuits against the Trump administration on a regular basis. It's just, and then the ballroom. I mean, the man's tearing down the East Ring of the White House to put in a ballroom. It is just an interesting kind of time to be around, you know? But, oh, by the way, sorry, I forgot what I was going to mention. Vivek Ramaswamy, in his statement where he said that the Republicans, got their butts kicked, essentially. He also said that he implores the Republicans to not use identity politics, race, religion, and orientation, things like that, and that they should rely on a person's character when picking a candidate. Which I think he kind of had to do, because a lot of the criticism on Mom Donnie was the fact that, he is an immigrant. I don't know exactly where from. I don't remember. But he is also a Hindu, I do believe. He got a lot of backlash for that. I think that doesn't quite bode well for Vivek Ramaswamy, seeing as he is a first-generation American. His parents were from India, and he is also Hindu. I think it would bode well for him to not use the identity politics, as I don't think he quite fits into the identity politics that they hit Mom Donnie with. So there's that. Also, I'm getting out here that, yes, they didn't want it released. I assume he is talking about the Epstein files, and they messed the country up. And it gives them more time to alter the evidence, and we still have the missing minute from his camera. Definitely Epstein. Missing minute from his camera. So, I mean, I guess there certainly does seem to be some kind of understanding that I guess this is all to delay the Epstein files. But again, I don't really see the point. They're going to get released. The lady's going to get sworn in. and honestly, at this point, I think that the GOP better just accept the deal. I mean, now, I understand that, I mean, they don't want to fold, I guess, but I mean, I don't know how long. I mean, the GOP has got to be hemorrhaging from this to some extent. I mean, they just lost handedly across the all the state elections. Well, I guess I can't say all, but a lot of state elections. Sorry, I forgot where I was going with that. Yes, the release of the Epstein file. Sorry, it's been a long day. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, because it seems to be, I mean, if it's all to delay the Epstein files, I really hope the delay is worth it, because I think that the GOP's probably gonna struggle to come back from this one. Maybe not for a long time, but I mean, it certainly seems like should the momentum stay this way, the midterms are gonna be a rough time for the Republicans. And like I said, I think the GOP is probably under a lot of pressure. I mean, there were polls coming out that I think it was 52% of people blame it on the Republicans, and it's 40-something percent of people blame it on the Democrats, and then there's a smaller number of people who blame it on both parties. And also, I would like to say that to some extent, I am not fond of the Democrats using this to their advantage for the sheer fact that there are, you know, I mean, sure, I guess it ended up being good for the Democratic Party come election time. But at the same time, you know, I mean, there are people who need the benefits and things that the government is usually provides. There are people who work for the government who have not been paid in over a month. I don't know what they're called, but the people who deal with the air traffic control, they said that they're dialing back air traffic at 40 airports due to because it's getting less and less safe to fly every day. Presumably because first off, I mean, a lot of air traffic controllers were fired by the Trump administration, and then not only that, now they haven't been paid for, you know, close to 40 days, so a lot of them probably just aren't showing up to work, which is fair enough, I guess. So there's that. I mean, you know, I don't even know what you do about that. I mean, it's Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is the biggest travel holiday of the year. You know, people like to go see their families and whatnot. I'm surprised it's not Christmas, though. Christmas is, you know, it's Christmas. But anyways, it's a rough time for people to not have, it's a rough time for there to not be, the food benefits for people, seeing as it's Thanksgiving, and it's a rough time for there to be, not safe travel, as, again, people like to travel for Thanksgiving. So there's that. I mean, there might be more people considering driving at this point in time. I couldn't tell you. But, nonetheless, like I said, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to use it to stall the Epstein files. They will be released, so I don't know what difference it makes. We got about, you know, 9 minutes or so left in the show here. If you wanted to add anything to this conversation, feel free. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Also, something I forgot to mention, Nancy Pelosi retires after, I don't know, 40 years, something like that, I think. I don't remember exactly. But she's been there a while, long time, I think 40 years, if I remember correctly. Rough time for Nancy Pelosi to retire, I think. You know, like I said earlier, I don't think it's a good time for the country, and it seems like, you know, when the country needs I don't know, people most, that she just decides to hang it up. Now, I assume that she's not going to, I mean, Scott seems to think that I think that she's just going to fade away. I think she's still going to talk, but she's not going to have a vote anymore. She's not going to, I don't know how well you can count votes if you're not in the room. And that was Nancy Pelosi's big skill is the vote counting. So, like I said, I don't know how that whole thing's gonna play out, but I assume there's somebody else in her seat that's gonna, well, who wants her seat. I mean, she's been there a long time. But yeah. So, I mean, I think that's rather interesting for her to retire at this point in time, but I think that I guess she had to retire at some point. She's 85, and I guess she figured that she's had enough. So yeah, I mean, people buy them. I mean, they like a lot of the things. So, you know, Pelosi's gone, not running again. Well, gone after, you know, I guess the midterms. So it's interesting. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know that now's a good time for Pelosi to retire. For the sheer fact that, like I said, country's not doing so great right now, and I think that it would have been beneficial for her to probably stay. She's got a lot of sway in D.C., you know, so that's good. I mean, that's what you need, I guess, if you're going to try to... I mean, I guess it's debatable that you want to block up your votes, but, I mean, it's good for your party that way, but it's... I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on your agency. But, yeah. So, like I said, though, I think that, I don't really know why they don't want to open up the government. I have a hard time just believing it's for the Epstein files. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, like I said. They're going to be released. It's gonna happen. And I think that's that. And my original thought was that it's just one big gamble. It was one big gambit for the GOP to blame it all on the Democrats, and then it backfired on them, and now they're just digging in, and that's not the best way to go. I mean, you know, it's definitely not going in your favor at this point in time. So I don't know. I think that they might want to try to salvage something before it's too late for all that. But, you know, what do I know, I guess? I don't know. Compromise used to be the name of the game, but it is not anymore. Nobody wants to compromise. I guess the Democrats tried to compromise to some extent. It's the same bill, pretty much. They just cut it down to 1 year length of time. So, I mean, they didn't change anything about the bill, I guess, except the length. So I guess that's a compromise to some extent, but like I said, I think the thought process there was that it would give the Republicans the chance to put forward the bill that they allegedly have, and you know, work through that to see if it's better than the Affordable Care Act, which it tends to, according to Marjorie Taylor Greene, not even exist. So that's good, I guess. You know, I don't know. I don't understand why you would lie, though. I mean, because when the government opens back up, you don't have a plan to show anybody. I just don't understand lying. I mean, it might work for you in the short term, but in the long term, you don't have anything to back it up. I don't understand. It seems so self-sabotaging to have such an... I was going to say, it feels like an obvious lie, but at the same, I mean, like, could they come out with a plan? Sure, I guess. I don't think they have a plan. I think if they had a plan, they probably would have showed it by now, especially if they thought it was better than the Affordable Care Act. And, I think they certainly would have given more than, like, 10 minutes of thought to denying the bill that extended the ACA, ACA credits for, a year. But I don't know. I think the Republicans are certainly feeling the heat now, especially Vivek Ramaswamy. I guess I can't speak for everybody else, but Vivek certainly seems to be concerned about the gubernatorial race now. If he wasn't before, he certainly is now. Which, I mean, I think you should always be worried during an election. I mean, nothing's guaranteed, you know. There could always be somebody who comes in and just sweeps people off their feet. So, there's that. But, I don't know, this gubernatorial election is different, because no matter who wins, Vivek Ramaswamy or Amy Acton, there's going to be a first. We're either going to have our first, I do believe he'd be our first non-white governor, or we'd have our first woman governor. So, you know, there's that. Either way, it's going to be a first. And either way, neither of them have any political experience, unless you want, I mean, I guess, I don't know, Vivek Ramaswamy followed Donald Trump around for a little bit and did whatever with Doge, and, Amy Acton was, I don't know what her title was, but she was the doctor on TV during COVID. I don't know what counts as politics, I guess. I mean, they were around politics. I mean, Vivek Ramaswamy ran for president. So, there's that. He's got that for him. But yeah. I think it's interesting that Amy Acton still talks to Mike DeWine. I thought that was rather interesting. So, I think it'd be nice if Mike DeWine endorsed Amy Acton. Doubt it happens, don't think it will, but it'd be neat. I'd like to see Tim Ryan get into the race. I think I've said that before. He'd be the only candidate with experience. But, you know, it's a bit late to be getting into the race at this point. You know, you got until, you got like 6 months to campaign, pretty much. So, I don't know what you really do about that. If you're Tim Ryan, I guess you should have got in earlier. I really don't know. I think he was just trying to feel it out, probably, see who all was getting in the race. But, you know, things happen, I guess. So, you know, with that being said, we've got about, I don't know, 45 seconds left of the show. But it's rather unfortunate that, you know, I don't know, there are no checks and balances anymore. That's unfortunate. Big fan of the checks and balances when they work. But, you know, I didn't think anybody would just go along to get along in politics. Compromise, at the very least, used to be the name of the game. But with that being said, I would like to thank everybody for listening. Feel free to tune in, always. You know, we're 24 hours. You know, have a nice night. Monday through Friday, 8 to 10. I am on Friday, 10 to 11. We have the Friday Night Live show, 8 to 10. Like I said, listen all the time. Appreciate everybody, and have a good night.
You're listening to The Talking Place. Just